8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
And live from our national studios here in Accra, and networking with all our regional FM stations and also on the World Wide Web at gbcghana.com, we welcome you to Behind the News, where we speak to the newsmakers and the experts. My name is Kingsley Obinchere. For tonight's edition, the saga of cocaine turned baking soda. Why is the vice president asking the police to halt its own investigation? Are more women falling victim to the sex for jobs phenomenon? That is what the report says, but why should this happen in an era of women empowerment? Behind the News will be exploring the issue and combating the menace of bushfires in the Nadoli district. Is concrete around electric poles the solution? Black Stars coach names a squad for AFCON 2012. Are they capable of delivering the blue ribbon? Much more for you in this edition. Behind the News, you are live on Radio Ghana and all our regional FM stations. And if you are in New York presently, you are getting us on gbcghana.com. As usual, we're picking your comments on 0264418767. And you might have heard earlier about that report from New York. Well, the world economy continues to record checkered moments. In some instances, it becomes difficult to predict what will happen within the next month. For thriving and well-developed economies, the stock exchange shows the pulse of events. The New York Stock Exchange is one of the world's largest, and top-notch economies look at what happens there with keen interest. President John Evans Atamos was a special guest at the New York Stock Exchange today, and we want to know how significant that visit was. And joining us to help us look at the issues in relation to this is Kwaku Anyidoho, Director of Communications at the Presidency. Should I say good afternoon, Kwaku, and good evening if you are listening in Ghana?
Well, I guess you are spot on. It's good afternoon here and then good evening back home.
Yes. What exactly did President Mills do at the stock exchange?
Well, good evening to all listeners. President Mills was invited specially today. And straight to the point, it had to do with Ghana's investment climate. And as I heard in your promo, the New York Stock Exchange, as you know, is, if not the best in the world, then it's one of the best in the world. And that's where all the financial thinking goes on. If the New York Stock Exchange is looking at you, then obviously you must be doing something right or wrong. In this case, it's about the Ghana's economy moving on the right path. And so the president went there and put forward a stronger case for Ghana's investment climate.
Yeah. He might have held meetings.
Well, yes. He was with the vice president in charge of governmental affairs of the stock exchange, Mr. Jeffrey Eubank. The main interaction had to do was with Mr. Jeffrey Eubank. But of course, on the sidelines, he met with the board chairman of Kosmos Energy. And I'm sure we all know Kosmos Energy in relation to Ghana's oil mine. Significantly, he was on the floor of the exchange where all the where all the buzzing takes place, and had the opportunity to feel at first hand. Of course, significantly, President Mills was instrumental in setting up Ghana's stock exchange. And so the stock market is nothing new to him. But of course, there's always a first experience. And it was a good experience for President Mills, and most importantly, a good experience for Mother Ghana. I mean, interestingly, today in the Financial Times, there's a positive article on Ghana, and we all know what the Financial Times means when it comes to the thinking of Wall Street.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit of what that article says?
Well, basically, it sums up for the way Ghana's economy is being managed vis-a-vis all the financial crunch worldwide. The indicators look good. And they think that it's a place that investments investors must eye. President Mills is doing something right, obviously. Of course, he's the first person to admit that we haven't gotten everything right. And he'll never say so. But I think that gradually, as the French say, petit à petit, l'oiseau fait son nid.
Yeah. You might have listened to other people doing business on the floor. What were they saying about Ghana? Did they have so much knowledge, or perhaps they were just making inquiries?
Oh, there's enough knowledge about Ghana on the stock, the New York Stock Exchange. I mean, once we've discovered oil and gas in commercial quantities, don't forget that Cosmos Energy is also listed here on the New York Stock Exchange. So there's already the buzz here when it comes to Ghana and what is happening. I think that what most of the investors are looking for is more of the democratic stability. That is why the president never loses an opportunity to reinforce the fact that come next year, nothing untoward will happen, so that we can have the stability that will drive the investors and the investment into Ghana.
Yeah. We've heard in recent times about the protests around Wall Street. Did you experience anything of the sort around the area?
Oh, not today. Not today, but when it was happening, yes. I guess that is why the folks at the Wall Street waited for everything to pipe down before inviting the president. Honestly, he should have been in, His Excellency President should have been in Ghana 2 days ago, but it's specifically because of this invite. That is why he delayed his coming. So, of course, the chaps there waited for everything to pipe down before setting the date. And if you ask me, it was worth the experience, my brother.
Worth the experience. Did you have someone saying immediately he's coming over to Ghana?
Well, I know that the president spoke to specifically to the railway sector and then tried to entice people to, or the investors to come and look at our railway sector. I mean, once we can get that up and running, we are in business as a nation. So there are people on the ground who are going to do the legwork, continue with the legwork. Of course, we have our ambassador here, His Excellency Ambassador Kanda, and his trade officers, and some other Ghanaians. Interestingly, we bumped into a few Ghanaians at the stock exchange. So it was an interesting experience. I'm sure that together we will try and move the agenda forward.
Kwaku, we want to thank you very much for your time.
Sure, my brother. And thank you also for the opportunity at Radio Ghana.
Kwaku Anyidoho is the Director of Communications at the Presidency, and we went all the way to the New York Stock Exchange to check exactly what happened with him there earlier. Behind the news, you are live, and if you are somewhere in New York and also somewhere around Washington and in the U.S. in general, you are getting us live on gbcghana.com. We move on with domestic issues. Reports picked up by Radio Ghana indicate that Vice President John Mahama has instructed the police administration to suspend investigations into the cocaine 10 baking powder saga. This directive was after a meeting with the Chief Justice, the National Security Coordinator, and the Chief of Staff. For more on what transpired at this crucial meeting and the directive on the police to suspend their own investigations, we'll be trying to get to John Jinapo, the spokesperson to the Vice President. But we had our correspondent covering proceedings with the Committee of Inquiry led by Justice Agnes Doji, an appeal court judge. He's on the line with us. Hello, Augustus.
Hello, Kingsley.
Can you tell us briefly what transpired at today's sitting?
Well, sitting of the committee to inquire into why the cocaine suspected turned into carbon soda was to start at 10 a.m. this morning at the Chief Justice's chamber. But unfortunately, when proceedings began a little after 10 a.m., we had to adjourn. The chairperson of the committee, Justice Agnes Doji, had to adjourn for an hour because the police prosecutors were not available then. Finally, they came and proceedings began. Three people, as I indicated in my 6 o'clock report, were questioned today, or they actually gave their accounts because it was not really a trial. Two of them were the investigators that handled the case. One started with it and was transferred. That was Thomas Ahe Kase. And then he was then followed by Joseph Mens Owusu, who also handled the case. The last person was the current head of the narcotics division of the CID, and that's Kofi Eje Tuasa. So in a nutshell, these three people were the ones who gave their accounts of how they saw the case and how they handled it.
Yeah. What did they say specifically?
Well, all of them in their submissions were trying to say that the police actually kept the documents or the evidence sealed and ensure that it was secure and no one could break into it. And so they cannot determine why the substance that initially they had tested and was said to be cocaine had later on during the last court proceedings turned out to be a different material. And so that was their position.
Yeah, so they still maintain their stance that it was tested as cocaine and sealed and all that, even we listened
yes,
to
yes,
yesterday.
Yes, very much so. They were very, very on point with their stance, especially the head of the CID,
and
the narcotics division of the CID, that is.
How was the atmosphere generally, looking at the mien of the people and all?
Well, I would say that aside the legal dons were around and a few journalists too, the cross section of the public who were there were a bit, for want of a better word, curious. Many expected that they would get, first-hand impression. Some even thought they could see the substance itself. The closest we got to was when an envelope, a brown envelope, and from my distance I could see red seals around it. Opened though, that was said to be the envelope containing the evidence. So that was the closest to it. But there was a bit of expectation on the faces of many people around. The crowd was not so big to overcrowd the chamber. It was fairly large with a few standing. So that was it. And I'm sure probably as the sittings continue over the weekend and all next week, the crowd might get thicker with the growing interest in the case.
Okay, so do we know when the next sitting is taking place?
It's taking place tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Expected to start the narration of their accounts will be the state attorney who handled the case. I'm told also that the other officials from the judge's office might be also there and all that. So that will be tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. at the Chief Justice's chamber at the Supreme Court.
Augustus Akwe, thank you very much for your update. That was our correspondent at the sitting of the Committee of Inquiry of Justice Agnes Doji in relation to the cocaine that turned into a different substance altogether. Meanwhile, the Forum for Governance and Justice has issued a press statement on the cocaine saga and saying it's another sign of a corrupt justice delivery system. The statement in part says the Forum for Governance and Justice is disturbed but not surprised to learn that a substance alleged to be cocaine, confirmed by the police to be cocaine, later turned out to be sodium bicarbonate in a case heard at an Accra Circuit Court. And the Forum believes that this case is yet another example of a corrupt justice delivery system that needs massive overhaul. However, the Forum welcomes the outrage expressed by the good people of Ghana in reaction to this disgraceful display of corrupt and unprofessional conduct by those in the business of law enforcement and justice delivery. And to them, we believe, to quote, this development will rally the people in support of our call for serious efforts to clean up the sordid nature of justice delivery in Ghana. We have joining us on the line now Dr. Clement Apa, convener of the Forum for Governance and Justice, to tell us much more about their statement and their stance on the whole issue. Good afternoon, Dr. Clement Apa, because you are also not in Ghana and far away at the moment.
Yes, good afternoon, my brother.
Yes, you have issued a statement. Why such a statement talking about justice delivery when we are yet to see precisely where the problem is coming from?
Well, thank you so much for having me on your flagship program. Most certainly, we found it necessary to issue the statement we did because we believe that this is yet another example of the ills and failures that have bedeviled our justice delivery system in Ghana. We know for a fact that this is not the first time such an occurrence has taken place, and we know that there are many other instances where many well-meaning Ghanaians have actually been defrauded by the justice delivery system, which is available to them per the Constitution and paid for by their taxes, to ensure that they get redress when they are wrong. And this is why we feel that it is important that we highlight the fact that this is another example of the colossal corruption.
Hello, Dr. Clement Apak.
Yes.
Yes, you are still on the line.
Yes. So, in fact, we have been encouraged, particularly...
That's unfortunate. That line to all the way in Canada tripped. We'll quickly try to reestablish contact. But it's behind the news, and you are live in Ghana on Twin City Radio, Radio Central, and also Volta Star. We are taking a quick break, and then we'll try whether we can get back to British Columbia and then update you on why the Forum for Governance and Justice is taking such stance. You are on Behind the News, and to come later on, we'll be looking at the squad named to represent Ghana in next year's African Cup of Nations. And also, we are talking about the issue of sex for jobs. Should it always be the situation? What should ladies be doing when it gets to it? Before then, we are picking a story from Ibrahim Kwati.
Government has signed an agreement with the private Malaysian company Media Prima to take over the 70% share owned by the company in Ghana Film Company. Ghana Film, which has been operating in the country for the past 15 years, will therefore be owned entirely by Ghanaians. The Deputy Minister of Information, Baba Jamal, who initialed for Ghana, said it is about time Ghanaians took hold of the management of the company to take it to a higher level.
Behind the News, thank you very much, Ibrahim Kwatin, for that one, as we still try to re-establish contact all the way out of this country. We move to the story. 11 years after the world got together in Beijing and fashioned out strategies to advance the cause of women, incidents that show that some women continue to fall prey to employers who want to take undue advantage of them before giving them employment continue to be recorded. A recent survey of 24 cases in manufacturing and service delivery companies, together with small-scale businesses, showed that there were 13 cases of sex for jobs. Is society beginning to accept this practice as normal? What can be done? And can we even ask that a trend is saying something about the mores and folkways of our society? Professor Kojo Sena is a sociologist and is on the line to help us discuss the issue. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, gentlemen, and good evening to you.
This is a problem that has been spoken about a number of times, but from the survey and from the report carried by the Finder newspaper, it appears it is not going away soon. What do you think is the problem? What's at the base of it, sociologically speaking?
Well, thank you very much. First of all, as a sociologist, you know, I will first of all be interested in, you know, the survey conducted. I will be interested in the population, the sample size, and all that. But assuming that what the survey is saying is correct, then we need to understand what is happening within the context of the changing dynamics of the society, where jobs are not available. And people are desperately looking for jobs. Obviously, sometimes people want to cut corners, you know, to get a job. And that is not good enough, but that is what appears to be happening.
In some cases, the jobs may be available, but people still want to take undue advantage. Does that mean that then they also have a problem, that is, those who want to take advantage of the ladies?
Well, you see, it all boils down to the fact that, you know, from time immemorial, even from our own cultural perspective, women, you know, have always been seen to be, you know, playing second fiddle. Men have the authority. It's a male-dominated society. The men call the shots, you know, and all that. So it is indeed what is happening may be an extension of what you know, the women have been going through by way of their, you know, lack of empowerment. So I will see it as primarily one, lack of jobs. Two, the fact that this is a male-dominated society, and so the men will always want to have, you know, their say. But that is obviously not good enough.
Certainly, it is going to create a problem even later on the job. For the ladies, you've spoken about empowerment, and you have mentioned that the need to survive too, the context of the changing dynamics. How should they handle the situation then? This is a hidden problem.
Well, you see, it depends on the moral judgment of the women who are prey to this situation. If a woman can stand up to her boss and say, look, to hell with you, if this is what you want, before you can promote me my job, then take your job, I'm going away. We would have begun from somewhere. But unfortunately, as I've said, the jobs are not available, everybody is desperate for jobs, and so the men obviously will take advantage of this. So it's not going to go away very soon, until perhaps we have situations where, you know, the crave for jobs, the search for jobs, you know, is reduced in intensity.
Do you think society has taken a strong stance and has worked actively to eradicate this from our society?
Well, you see, it's a situation oftentimes between two people. The person who has been the victim, let me call it that way, the victim and her boss. If the woman or the victim chooses to report this, then society will take it up. But obviously, society appears to be quiet because nobody is reporting, nobody is saying anything, and therefore it is a hidden phenomenon. You know, but as society, you know, becomes aware of this situation, you know, people will soon begin to talk about it. Civil society will get up. You know, women lawyers, women activists and all that will get up and begin to talk about this thing. So for now, because it appears to be a hidden phenomenon, that is why it appears society is not actively, you know, talking about it.
So can we say that the campaign for respect for women and their rights is working well here?
Well, you see, women's rights, yes, there's a campaign, you know, to teach women about their rights and all that. But then you are talking of a situation where somebody is desperately in need of a job. And if the person should insist that this is my right, I will lose my job, then she's torn between, you know, the devil and the deep blue sea. What can I do? So it depends on the person's moral standing on the issue. If she can say, to hell with you, take your job, I am going away, that will be the beginning. But oftentimes, you know, some of them succumb to the situation because of the difficulty they find themselves in. So not until we are able to improve, you know, the women's situation, not until we are able to, you know, ensure that people can have access to jobs, it's going to be a problem. The problem will still remain.
Well, what does it say about mores and folkways?
Well, yes, our mores, our folkways, our cultural practices do not permit men, you know, to do this to women. I mean, you can't have a sexual relationship with somebody's wife. You cannot have a sexual relationship forcibly with somebody, you know, who doesn't want it. Our society, our cultures frown on this. But as I'm saying, society is changing. Society is changing. We have been exposed to all kinds of European things, European fashions, European beliefs and practices. And therefore, all these are impinging on our cultures. And so our cultures and the underlying philosophies and beliefs are gradually being, you know, undermined, more or less.
So you believe
certainly you can't do this in the rural area.
That is what we are trying to weigh against, because you know, in the urban situation, the individualization and all these other issues will come up.
Yes. Go on.
Yes, I'm listening to you.
No, I'm saying that oftentimes this phenomenon occurs more in the urban areas. than the rural areas. Because when in the urban areas, of course, we have this is where we have the jobs, this is where we have the industries and all that, and this is where we have the latest craves and fashion. So it's bound to happen here more than in the villages. But in the villages, our society, our cultures, our beliefs and practices are, in spite of everything, you know, they still are strong. Still are strong.
Are we in the lurch? The urbanites.
Pardon me?
Are we in the lurch then?
Well, we are. We are. We are seriously in the lurch, yes. Society must get up and talk about this matter. And if women, those who are supposed to be victims, can come out and say it openly, that this is what has happened to me, yes, then people will follow them. But where they need to protect their image, they need to protect their jobs, then the situation remains the same.
Good. Do you see sometimes stigma worrying some women who want to also come out and openly talk about the issues?
Yeah, you know our society. If, assuming the person has been assaulted, the person has been raped, it is very difficult for that person to come out in the open and say, I've been raped. As soon as you open your mouth to say this, it means your chances for marriage, your integrity, your self-worth, and all these things are eroded immediately. So sometimes people choose to keep quiet and bear the pain with equanimity.
Certainly, such equanimity, will always be perturbed, even in later years. Professor, don't you think so?
That sometimes they do what?
Such equanimity will be perturbed.
Oh, obviously. Yes, well, it depends on the kind of person you are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, I'm sure in this country, there are so many people, who have gone through this this pain, and yet they bear it and smile along as if nothing has happened. So it depends on the person. There are people who are prepared to talk, but the majority of women are not prepared to talk because, one, they don't want to be shamed. Two, they will say, oh, this big man, I'm going to spoil his job. This MP or whatever, I'm going to spoil his job, and therefore I won't talk. And then they carry the problem with them. So we are in a catch-22 more or less.
Well, we want to thank you very much, Professor Kojo Sena.
Yes,
for your input into this one.
Thank you very much.
A catch-22 situation, really, as they say, between Scylla and Charybdis. But you are still on Behind the News. You are live on Ura Radio and also Radio Upper West together with Radio Savannah. Some of your tests here. Mohammed Nani from Y is saying, mysterious things are now happening in Ghana under the NDC regime. Cocaine turning into baking powder. Don't throw stones if you are living in a glass house. Mohammed Nani says so. And Nelson from Bole, the security forces should stop the unnecessary ways of handling the cocaine saga and speak the truth for Ghana to move forward. Nalas and Zanduliwa, if not the NDC regime, where else can you get this? How can a cocaine change to a washing powder? We will definitely show them the exit. And DK Loglo Tema, how can the Chief Justice investigate what got missing at the court? And Richmond, who cocaine can never change into washing soda or baking powder, no matter how long it takes. But we want to move overseas once again, and we have rejoining us on the line Dr. Clement Apak. Earlier, we lost him when we were discussing their stance on the issue of the cocaine that has changed to become something else. Dr. Clement Afaki, we welcome you back to the program.
Thanks for having me, and I apologize. I wish I could have prevented the line from going off.
Yes. You were so strong on the issues that we've not really had it going so clearly in terms of justice delivery. You were developing a point when we suddenly lost you. Can you please go over that one for us?
Yes. The point I was trying to make is that in as much as this current case has captured national attention, our position has long been the fact that the justice delivery system has not been functioning the way that we can all be proud of. And we have many instances and examples to buttress that point. I alluded to the fact that a number of lawyers had made statements to the effect that there was corruption in the judiciary, and they were blacklisted by an organization known as the Association of Judges and Magistrates. We know, too, that the current Chief Justice has made similar comments. The previous Chief Justice has made similar comments. Even a parliamentary committee, which was set up in 2003 to look into this issue, compiled a report that concluded that it is no longer a perception that there is corruption in the justice delivery system of Ghana, but that it is a reality. Even international journals have all publicized that. Practically on the ground, we know many people who have come to my organization since we started operating with complaints. We had a case where an old man for 10 years went to court to try to redeem his property, only to win the case and died 7 years thereafter, pursuing the court officials to get a copy of the judgment. We know of a case where a judge is said to have edited court proceedings to steal a verdict in favor of another entity. Quite recently, two magistrates were dismissed for corrupt practice. And we say, why do we do that? Why shouldn't people in higher places who are found culpable be prosecuted and be made to face the full force of the law, the very same laws that they hold the rest of us accountable for? If we are to do these kinds of things to those same people who fall afoul of the law that they hold the rest of us accountable to, then we will begin to set the tone and to let everyone know that no one is above the law, and that those who have been privileged to sit on cases and pass judgment on us themselves are required to do better than the rest of us. And you see, in this particular case, it is most worrying because most Ghanaians remember the previous case involving the MD Benjamin, where the cocaine suddenly, you know, metamorphosed into concentration. And this is happening again under the watch of the same group of people, the police and, you know, members of the justice delivery system. So what is going on? And you see, the fear that we have is that this type of attitude not only erodes the confidence of the people in the system, which in itself can lead to chaos, because people are going to start settling their scores when they know that they cannot trust the system that is available to them to seek redress. But we are even worried because it has implications for our democracy. We are coming close to an election that every Ghanaian knows is going to be very competitive, and we are told that it is going to be a make or break. We are going to need a judiciary that both sides of the political divide, people with different opinions and ideologies, can trust. If they cannot trust the judiciary, the justice delivery system, can you imagine the types of challenges that we can face as we are getting closer to the election? And who is to say that the election is not going to end up as close as it was last time, and that maybe a losing party may want to seek recourse through the law courts?
So you are calling for a bold action. What should that bold action be?
That bold action that we are calling for is for the Judicial Council to take up its constitutional mandate of being the entity responsible for proposing and implementing changes that would ensure that justice is not fulfilled. The problem we have in Ghana is that, by and large, the ability to pay has a role to play in whether or not a verdict is decided in your favor or you lose a case. And that is the truth. If you
can,
a public survey in Ghana, most Ghanaians would agree. So we want the Judicial Council of Ghana to establish an inquiry, much more like the Chief Justice has done. But that inquiry should be a broad inquiry that is going to have members from civil society, from law enforcement, from community groups, from traditional rulers, to go around the country and hold sittings in every regional capital, inviting the good people of Ghana to come forward, those who have complaints about being defrauded through the justice delivery system, to launch their complaints, be granted immunity, and then to also suggest practical ways that we can work together as a society to get true justice delivery for our nation.
Dr. Clement Apak, we want to thank you very much for joining us on the line again. That is the convener for the Forum for Governance and Justice, Dr. Clement Apak. on the line. But we return to Ghana once again, and this time we are going to Gusau. Recently, 13 Fulanis were allegedly killed by some indigents. The latest reports coming from Gusau indicate that Fulanis have come under attack again. This time, no life was lost, but several cattle belonging to the Fulanis were attacked and slaughtered. The Gusau DC, Alhaji Hussein Al-Hassan, is on the line to tell us more about what happened on this occasion. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Can you confirm for us whether really there's been some attacks in your area again on Fulani herdsmen?
Well, it is not an attack on Fulani herdsmen. It is about two Konkoma communities clashing over, actually, booting the shed after the Konkoma conflict, the Konkoma-Fulani conflict. That resulted in the 13 deaths.
So it means that after the death of the 13 Fulanis, whatever they owned, the people were trying to share.
That's the information we got this morning. What happened is that, well, what is happening is that early this morning, I had a call from my assemblyman for that area to the effect that two Konkoma communities were, that is, namely Junjun number 1 and Junjun number 2, you know, were at war over a booty shared as a result of the Fulani Konkoma conflict. I dispatched, even with the information we got earlier, was that one, I mean, they had lost one life and several properties injured. I mean, lost. And then 10 cattle were killed. But upon the security, we realized that it was a different thing altogether. Even though the booty was at the center of the controversy, but no life was lost.
Yeah, this is happening at a time when you are still investigating the first incident and you've not arrested people yet. Does that not give you indications as to where you should be looking for the people now?
Yeah, some arrests have been made. You know, as to the conflict, we have about 6 people now in custody for various crimes caused within during the period. One is a prime suspect who is one of the line. Then another 3 were picked up this morning from three villages, Konkoma communities. They are also in police custody, and 2 were also arrested for robbery, you know, robbing the Fulanis who were passing or running away with their cattle. That is the situation now.
Yeah. So what is the District Security Committee doing to prevent the situation from degenerating further?
Well, that is the problem we have at hand. This, the security have just returned. When we got the news, the chairman of DISEC dispatched security. An emergency meeting was held. We dispatched security, the joint team of police and military. They just returned. And when they got there, the June number one had vacated the village. You know, they only met June number 2, the residents there, and they confirmed that June number 1 were the aggressors. You see, what happened was that the June number 2 were trying to protect some of the Fulanis and their cattle, but the June number 1, the residents, did not agree to that effect, and as a result, they confronted each other this morning. I mean, resulting in the killing of about 10 cattle, which they reported earlier. But reports trickling in from there, just after the security had left the place, about 10 minutes ago, I had a call again that those people from June number 1 who had located the village had returned and had attacked June number 2. So as I speak, that is what we are grappling with. That is the information I've just received, and I've passed it on to the security heads, and we are trying to see how we can solve that decision.
Well, I want to thank you very much for this update, Alhaji Hussein Al-Hassan. That is the Gushu District Chief Executive. You are so live on Behind the News, and you are getting us on Sunrise FM in Kofodia, and also on Unique 95.7 together with Ubunu 96.5. And also somewhere in Kumasi, you are live on Garden City Radio. Some of your tests here. Teacher Collins is saying the IGP should set up a committee to investigate the cocaine issue to raise the good image of the Ghana Police Service. If the police or judiciary is found guilty, the law should not spare them, AU Farouk from Tamale saying. Those who think they fear snakes and scorpions should rather play with them and fear politics. This cocaine saga is simply an act of sabotage. It has been politically motivated to balance the equation. Saeed from Garu sent that one. And Atibela Moses Pusiga, Ghanaians should rally behind the Black Stars with prayers to win the 2012 African Cup and stop blaming the coach on his selection of players. A quick break. We'll be back. Behind the news, well, that last test was talking about the Black Stars and prayers, but real action will be needed. The Black Stars coach, Goran Stefanovic, has released the 25-man squad for the 2012 Africa Cup of Nations in Gabon and Equatorial Guinea. Conspicuously missing in the squad is veteran goalkeeper Richard Olelikinson and Dominic Adia, but does this squad look like a strong one that will end the country's failures at lifting the Africa Cup for the past 30 years? Sports analyst Carl Tufor has joined us on the line to look at the coach's final choice and what it means for the country in next year's tournament. Good evening, Carl.
Good evening, Kingsley.
Well, the question is regularly asked after every selection. Did we have the right selection of players?
Well, in the coach's eyes, he's got the right selection of players, and it's his views that matter, and not really mine or yours or anybody else. But I'm a wee bit just disappointed that one or two players were not included.
Yeah, okay. Is it about Adia or who?
No, it had to do more with Harrison Afful, who has played extremely well for his club side, and they won the African Champions League. And then I was just hoping that they'll take a look at Sammy Adia as well.
Yeah. So, having looked at this, can you give us a quick update on some of the players and some of the positions you think are strong enough, at least for now?
In terms of strong enough, that's a difficult question to say because I really don't know some of the players. I really haven't seen Charles Tetchy play, Masawudu play. But the core of the team is what went to Angola 2010 and to South Africa 2010. So, there's some level of continuity there. It's not a total discarding of some of the other players and then the new ones are not cracking. So basically, it's more or less a mixture of old and new. But I think. He says that these are the ones he feels can win the cup. The pressure is on him to deliver. He has to deliver. 30 years is a lifetime without a trophy. You can't go much longer than that.
Yeah. What do you say of the chance given to the leading goal scorer on the local league?
That's a very good sign. The local players are more concerned about. Sometimes the impression is created that if you are nobody, or if you are Kingsley or Benchere, you decide that you're going to go out and go and play in some second or third division obscure league in Europe, then you're likely to be picked rather than somebody playing regularly in our Premier League, and it doesn't all go well. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a good sign, but I still would have wanted to have seen a few more of the locally based players.
A few more? You are talking of players like?
I'm talking of players. There's this the protocol number 6. Is it called Yahya Malam? Yahya. There were one or two other. How do I put it? Mahatma Otu. I would have liked to have seen Nathaniel Asamoah being given another chance. And you go over to Clote, Manu Clote of Chelsea. I thought he could have done a good job for us as well.
Yeah, it's sometimes stated that some of these local players will get a chance for a call-up and they don't even kick any ball in the course of the tournament. Is it still good?
That's the problem I have. You're supposed to be using, once you've qualified, you're supposed to be using your friendly matches to look at other people and see how they can come up in the class. When you don't do that, then you're still feeling the same old team for friendlies and competitive matches, and I don't think you're building for the future. And that's why when you go to the tournament, you suddenly realize that, my goodness, I've never tried this guy before, so I can't afford to risk him. And then they sit on the bench kicking their heels. And it can lead to some level of frustration, that's true.
Yeah. The team is talking about two trial matches before the tournament begins. Is it enough for assessment?
Well, sincerely put, I'll be amazed if they can get the full complement of their players to go and play in those trial matches. One is on the 12th and the other one's on the 15th. And if you look at already what happened at Man City, where the Ivorian Kolo Touré will be leaving at the last minute, you can imagine what the other club sides will be doing in Europe. So basically, that's it.
Yeah. Generally, about the tournament, there is that talk of a shift into the odd year. Can that even help the situation at all?
To me, you should do it every 4 years, not off years. Every 4 years. You see, you belittle the quality of the Nations Cup when you have it too often. That's the first point I need to emphasize. Two, then what is the African Championship for? So you host the Nations Cup 2012. 2014, you host the African Championships, the one for the local players. 2016, you hold the Nations Cup. Every 2 years, my estimation is simply too much. Absolutely simply too much. Every 4 years, we do.
Every 4 years?
Yes.
Do you think they are prepared to? Because the suggestions have come previously, and yet it's not been heeded.
It's going to come to a head very soon. Believe you me. It's going to come to a head very soon, where clubs would simply refuse outright to release players. And then you see what would happen. Because the clubs are playing the players their feet. So that's exactly what's going to be happening now.
Yeah. People are saying that because some of the big guns in African soccer are out, this is the chance for Ghana. Is it that easy?
It certainly helps our cause very much so. Because those four nations would have given us a bit of a problem. I'm not saying we couldn't win without with them there, but I'm saying that the fewer clubs, the fewer nations there that will really seriously seek us, the better it will be for us. And I think it enhances the opportunity. But we are not the favorites. The favorites are the Ivory Coast, no doubt.
Yeah. But what do you make of the statement that there are no minnows now in African soccer?
That's been a truism since 1990, right across the world. So let's not mince words. You're not going to beat Swaziland 5-0 again, or 7-1, or 6-0. No, you're going to have a rightful fight with them.
Yeah. So, generally, if you have to dispassionately look at the team, what is their chance?
I don't, and I will not talk about that. I need to see the other nations, how far they've gone. And from our side of the world, you know, we don't know much about these. Many of our nations, because most of their players will be coming from outside. But on the name, if you take them on the basis of the name, then Ivory Coast have the biggest chance, I mean really, to become African champions. But then again, they've always been favored for the last day tournament, so what has, or where have they ended up with? Nothing. Zilch.
So, does the tag of a perennial favorite now worry Ivory Coast much more than it did to Ghana some time ago?
You see, the sum of the parts does not necessarily make it a very good team. You cannot pick big individuals, but not necessarily players who form a team, and that's probably their problem right now.
Kyle, I want to thank you very much for sharing your views with us.
Okay, thank you very much, Kimberly.
Kyle Yafitifor is a sports analyst. He joined us on the line to do a quick assessment of the squad as named for the African Cup of Nations. Behind the news, after sports, we want to look at something else happening to our environment, bushfires. It is no news to hear that bushfires have destroyed farmlands and property, especially in the northern parts of the country, especially too around this time of the year. In Radio Ghana's primetime news at 13 hours yesterday, the Deputy Upper West Regional Minister, Cesar Kale, said the bushfire incidents recorded so far is alarming. The problem has gotten to a level where the regional minister has directed NADMO officials in the region to assess the situation. One of the districts that has been ravaged by bushfire is Nadoli, which had some of its electricity poles burnt. Behind the news has gathered that the Nadoli Assembly held an ordinary session today and a number of far-reaching measures were adopted to address the bushfire menace. On the line now to give us details is the District Chief Executive Abu Kasambata. Good evening, sir.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Kingsley.
We are talking about far-reaching measures to address the bushfire problem. What exactly did you decide on?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me on your program. And let me first and foremost say a very good evening to all your cherished listeners across the length and breadth of Ghana. Well, I think that is the bush burning in Nadoli district is something that is quite alarming, and it's something that the VRA or NETCO through the Regional Coordinating Council has drawn our attention to the fact that the district is the worst offended in the region. So we felt it is important to find a very prudent measure to address this menace. I made a suggestion to the House. Today we had a second ordinary meeting of the State Assembly members. So we made a proposal that it will be more reasonable for us to construct paths or slabs around the high tension poles as a long-term measure to protect the poles from bush fires. You do all agree with me that the high tension poles are very expensive, and it is the duty of the assembly to provide low tension poles once the contract is finished and handed over to the community or the assembly. So we have received complaints, especially from the China Water Energy that is working in Upper West Region, more specifically in Nadoli District. Indeed, we carry out a lot of sensitization programs, but it has become a culture and a norm of the people of the district. We have done our best in terms of sensitizing them, in terms of educating them to know the recipe associated to bush fire burning in the district. We know power is very essential. Power is something that can really elevate or reduce poverty and empower the rural folks. And most of the communities in Upper West Region, more specifically in Nadoli District, are going to benefit from the China Water Project rural electrification. Now, if we don't put up a strong measure or a program to sustain and come up with a long-term measure, it will be very difficult for the assembly to use our small resources to continue to buy high-tension poles to replace the burned ones. So I made this suggestion to the assembly members this morning, and it was quite debatable. People expressed their opinion, they expressed their views, and finally they buy into the idea that it is important for us to construct concrete slabs around all the high tension poles in Nadoli District. And this is something that we have adopted, and we are going to source funding to execute it immediately to protect the high tension poles and also do away with the problems that we are facing. And it is also alarming to indicate that because of the bushfire burning in Nadoli District, we have lost almost 80 acres of maize in the district, and information is still flowing in. And as I indicated earlier on, that the NADMO officer is still collating information about farms that have been burned, houses that have been affected because of bushfire in the district. So it's something that is quite alarming, and personally, I'm really traumatized.
Yeah.
And I'm really touched about the nature and the accelerated nature, the nature of mine that bushfire is seriously seizing
creating problems for you. Yes.
In Nadoli District.
Naturally, it's some people who cause these bushfires. Are you talking about prosecution, perhaps some education, and then following up with people being arrested and also being made to face the full rigors of the law?
Certainly, we cannot. The law is more clear and explicit to the good people of this country, regardless to our political affiliation, our culture, our ethnic dynamics. But once you violate the ethics of this land, the law certainly must take its own course. And we have taken prudent measures. We have carried out a lot of sensitization programs. We have actually held a lot of debates with community members just to alert them. Now the police is alert. they are more on the move. So if we make any attempt or any arrest, obviously the law must definitely take its own course, regardless to our ethnic, political, and religious sentiments. But law must definitely take its own course to reserve the little resources for us to use it to accelerate economic growth in the district.
So are you doing intensive education and campaigns in the area for people to know that this is what you intend to do and this is what they should also do?
Yeah, let me say that we have, I wouldn't like to say that we have done a lot, but we have used your medium and other channels of communication to communicate to the chiefs and people of Nadoli district that this is a very alarming issue and we all need to come on board. We should try to desist away from this negative attitude. So that is why I'm saying that the information service is on the ground. The assembly members are more informed about the nature. Opinion leaders, chiefs, and everybody is more worried. So we think that we need a conscious effort to strike against this.
But
I thought the best way we can find a comprehensive measure to reduce the next of bushfire attacking high tension poles is to upon this construction of slabs within the high tension poles.
Did you mention other key things apart from the bushfire that you think should be worked on or you have worked on?
Yes, let me quickly say that the assembly has also constructed a lot of classroom blocks and in many communities in the district. And the chiefs and people also express their heartfelt gratitude to the GetFund administrator and the GetFund itself for the numerous infrastructure development that we have received. You also do agree with me that quality education leads to quality life. The government, under the able leadership of His Excellency Professor John Evans Atta Mills, you know, believe that it is the right of every child and every young person to have access to quality basic education for personal development and human resource development to achieve accelerated economic growth in Ghana, vis-a-vis to attain the Millennium Development Goals. So I think we also touched on it, but the most stressing thing that really excites most of the assembly members today was the support from the Member of Parliament for Nadoli West, Honorable Albert Bagbin. Indeed, to me as Chief Executive, I was really over-enthused with his initiative from donors and development partners to provide 22 number boreholes.
Okay.
As I see now, the people are there drilling the boreholes. And I also use the opportunity to share with assembly members to know the role of the Member of Parliament, his support, ensure that the his constituency people have access to decent and healthy water.
Okay.
And I stated this position clearly that this resources is not coming from the share of proper fund, neither is it.
But the contribution directly. Mr. Abukasa Mbata, because of our time, we'll leave it here, but we'll find time to look at the other developments taking place in the Nadoli district. But thanks so much for updating us on what you are doing about the bushfire and other issues. Before we go, the CJ should resign to pave way for transparent investigations over the cocaine saga. Gaddafi Zabila is saying, Tia Wale Wale, this development is a serious dent on the integrity of judges. And Ghana is in a terrible mess. How can cocaine turn into soda? Ghanaians don't deserve this. Mali from Buipe. And when it turned into Kokonte, the NPP was blamed. Now it's washing soda, and the NDC should be blamed as well. Karim Gbana from Sabare. And Bashiru Asuka Kumasi, politicians are meddling and defending their parties in this cocaine saga. God save us from these men. And Richmond, sex for job. It is only women who can stop this. If an employer requests for sex before giving you an employment, just leave the job for him. And this quick one from Baba Musa UDS. Kinsley, it is not only sex for jobs, but also sex for marks in some of the tertiary institutions in the country. And that is where we wrap it all up for today. On behalf of Isaac Yawedu, sat at the controls, Bright Agama, Edmund Tete, Chris Esiru, John Pobi, and Abraham Asaria production team, together with Ibrahim Kwatin, who did the summaries. My name is Kinsley Obinchere.